since he had left the company. Katzenberg had always wanted Disney to acquire a network, and now it had. Eisner was anxious about taking his call, but given the DreamWorks deal with ABC, he'd have to deal with Katzenberg eventually. Eisner was relieved that the conversation was uneventful and that Katzenberg graciously wished him well with the merger. That night, Eisner and Tom Murphy continued the round of talk shows, appearing on Larry King Live and Nightline. Ken Auletta, writing in The New Yorker, bestowed the highest accolade. Eisner's triumph has transformed him once again, from the frog back into a prince. No one was more electrified by the news than Steve Burke, Dan Burke's son, who'd grown up calling Tom Murphy Uncle Tom. Burke felt he was languishing in Paris, off the radar screen now that Euro Disney had been restructured and renamed as Disneyland Paris. Despite the rebranding effort to shake off the negative associations with Euro Disney, just about everyone outside of Disney kept referring to it by the old name. More important, his children were reaching school age, and he wanted to move them to the United States. Burke used every opportunity to remind Eisner that he'd promised to bring him back from Paris. Nothing had yet materialized, but Eisner assured him that now something would. What better person to help integrate Disney and ABC than Burke, who knew both corporate cultures intimately? One day, Jeffrey Katzenberg called, saying he was going to be in Paris and would like to get together. Though Burke had never been as close to Katzenberg as he was to Wells and Eisner, he admired his achievements. He was surprised when, at their meeting, Katzenberg asked him if he'd be interested in joining him at DreamWorks. Burke declined. "Why not at least consider it?" Katzenberg asked. "I feel a lot of loyalty toward Michael," Burke answered. "I promise you someday that will change," Katzenberg said. "Michael Eisner has no loyalty to you." "Yes, he does," Burke insisted. "Let me tell you something," Katzenberg continued. "Fundamentally, Michael doesn't care about anybody else. Maybe his wife. All Michael cares about is Michael." With the Cap Cities deal, Disney nearly doubled in size, which also doubled Eisner's responsibilities. In a sense, it was the ultimate public statement that Eisner's heart attack hadn't diminished him, even if it flew in the face of his doctor's advice to reduce stress. As part of that effort, Eisner had been planning to spend the month of August with Jane in Aspen, getting some aerobic exercise by hiking and biking and, to the extent he was capable, resting. Much to Jane's dismay, those plans evaporated. Now his time was consumed with meetings and phone calls. Jane did her best to remind him that he was supposed to be doing less, that he needed more help, that he should hire someone to replace Wells. Eisner listened, but at the same time he embraced the new venture with zest. He was actually enjoying the stress. But he promised her he'd renew the effort to recruit Ovitz. At the same time, he invited Litvak and his wife Judy to join them in Aspen the following weekend. The Litvaks arrived, anticipating that Litvak himself was likely to be offered Wells's job. After all, he'd been functioning as chief operating officer, which had been Wells's position. He'd rescued Disney from the brink of disaster with Euro Disney, and he was leading the legal team in the Cap Cities acquisition. He'd made his debut in Sun Valley, mingling